Okay, so this is the second episode where I'm talking to a unicorn, an African-American Republican conservative who voted for Donald Trump. Morris, welcome back to the show.
Thanks, Dr. Curtis. Glad to be here once again.
Okay, so we're going to get back into the conversation that we had yesterday, and we're going to talk more about your perspectives relating to BLM and social justice and things along those lines. So, okay, so here we go.
In a world of incompetent bosses, micromanagers, and petty tyrants, one management professor claims that he can help you become the kind of leader that you would want to follow. You are listening to The Leadersmith. Now, here is your host, Darren Curtis.
Black Lives Matter. What do you think of the Black Lives Matter movement?
Black Lives Matter movement, I think it's just the movement. It's the flavor of the month. I think they mean well. Like I was sharing with you yesterday, listening to Candace Owens and what she's been putting out on Twitter and seeing that the official Black Lives Matter movement is really just an arm of the DNC for fundraising is kind of alarming. That they're making all this money off this tragedy.
And I'm sure that'll be published at least on Fox and other conservative outlets. I mean, they're going to have great heyday with that, seeing how much Black Lives Matter has given to Democrats and not a single Republican, not even, Tim Scott, because he's not, if you listen to Joe Biden, black enough.
According to Joe Biden, I'm not black. If I'm not voting for him, I'm not black, period. So
wouldn't that be racist to say that you're not a particular color if you're not voting for that's how it strikes me. Doesn't that kind of comment strike you that way?
With Joe Biden, I mean, back in 2012, when he said, if you vote for Romney, they're going to put y'all back in chains. He's just absurd.
Race baiting. That's what it is. Yeah. Okay. So Black Lives Matter. You mentioned Candace Owens. If I've learned anything from reading Facebook posts and talking to black friends, they hate Candace Owens. I mean, like, if you were to say, who do you want us to give the electric chair to? Would it be Derek Chauvin or Candace Owens? They would say Candace Owens.
Oh, yeah.
That's my view. Why do they hate Candace Owens so much?
I think Candace has hit a nerve. I think she's exposing the fraud of the left. We have a saying, us black Republicans, that we've escaped the plantation. I think there's a concerted effort on the left to keep minorities, and we're seeing it now with illegal immigration and Hispanic culture and community, to keep people dependent on government. The government is the solution. Government is the answer. Is that you don't personally have the bona fides to be responsible for your life and take yourself out of poverty and out of these economic situations, that government is the answer. Candace is speaking truth to that. She's trying to go into the black community and speak and say, look, there is an alternative. We can take responsibility for ourselves, and we can, through making wise choices, get where you need to go. It's not systemic racism. It's not systemic oppression. And I think because she's not fitting the narrative that's out there, she's facing a lot of backlash, just like Diamond and Silk and Ben Carson and others, Herman Cain.
Like, how do other African Americans view you? You mentioned this a little bit with they discriminate against you because you voted for Trump.
Yeah, a lot of people don't. I mean, they honestly, I'm just so charming. I have a way with people. I can kind of get a couple minutes of their time. But when you have a conversation, I hear the same old recycled things from CNN. It's like I'm talking to Don Lemon and Anderson Cooper. A lot of my friends who are black who vote Democrat don't think or speak for themselves. They just recycle the talking points they hear on TV or they see online. And when you say, okay, well, if you just say, I mean, it's quite funny sometimes. I mean, personally, I had a coworker who, if just mentioning the name Trump triggered her, I don't even know how she really got upset, like to the point where she would go to HR. I mean,
wow.
So Trump derangement syndrome is a real thing.
Violence against her because you don't share her perspective. I mean, that's the way the social justice warriors are going to talk about this thing, that words are actually violence, and that I'm really hurting you, and because my narrative isn't the same as your narrative. Actually, my narrative is very close to your narrative, but you understand what I'm saying. I mean, that's the way that they perceive this.
Yeah, it's really interesting. I just have never, you know, I'm 35, but I'm like, where do we get to a point where we can't even have different opinions? Like, we have to agree on everything.
Yeah. And so in that, and that's what I was talking about yesterday, was in that we need more discussion, not canceling each other and saying, well, you're not going to be my Facebook friend, or I'm not going to listen to you. We need to have more discussion. Big news, professor calls for more discussion. No, we need to understand each other's perspectives rather than shut it down. Like, I don't need to just say, as much as I can't see the systemic argument that just because I'm white, I am part of the problem. Just because I can't see that doesn't mean I can't try to understand you and your, not you, but the African-Americans who believe that that's the case and believe that, you're right, I want to understand fully, because if I don't understand them, I'm not going to help anyway. If I do understand them, maybe we can figure out where the middle actually is instead of, but people that just say, well, you just don't get it. If you either toe the party line or you're the problem. Silence is violence. No, silence is violence. That statement is violence to actually getting along and figuring it out. Mm. So that's just my perspective, but tell me what you think.
Yeah, it's really alarming to me that you can't even stay silent. They don't even give you time to kind of process your thoughts anymore. You have to kind of come down on one side or the other. The virtue signaling online and social media is just at a whole other level.
It's exhausting to have to virtue signal all day long.
I mean, corporations, when they had the Black Lives Matter, had the blackout, I was seeing corporations have like the little blackout logo.
Yep.
And I'm like, okay, what does Xerox have to do with this? I mean, I couldn't make the leap. But I mean, I guess everybody wants to say I'm in solidarity with Black people, that I understand the Black struggle, the perceived Black struggle. Well, you know, I saw someone on Twitter, they had posted, I wish I could know off the top of my head who attributed it, but they were like, well, all these liberal journalists are crying out for Black people and their plight. Well, how come they don't resign their jobs so that they can be more Black journalists?
That's an interesting point.
You know,
interesting point. Yeah, give way if that's the case. So I can comment on the corporations, because the corporations' goal is to sell more stuff, right?
Yeah,
I mean, that's really it. So, and we were never more united than we were. So this happened on a Monday night. I could be wrong. It might have been a Tuesday. I think it happened on a Monday night.
Yeah, I think it was Tuesday.
Tuesday is when I first saw the virtue signaling from some of my liberal friends. They do this all the time, so I didn't really catch it.
Right.
By Wednesday, I was seeing it, and I was looking at it. I was stunned. Now, I've been into martial arts for years, right? So I was looking at this guy, the knee on the neck, thinking like, whoa, you're not, what is he doing? So I train, one of the people that I train with most, the person that I'm partnered with when I do judo and jujitsu, and the person that I'm partnered with most is a cop. He's actually a school officer now. He was a cop for many years, but he has taught me more ways to get thrown to the ground and tied up into a pretzel than I can imagine. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, he's really good at control, making sure whatever. At no time has his knee ever been in my neck. Now it's been in my back, in my shoulder blade, in my armpit. I've wanted to scream like a little girl sometimes. Let me tell you, I mean, he's had it down to a science. So I was looking at that going, wow, that's not right. And then when I look at that, I see a cop that's wrong, and I see the other cops like, what are you doing, guys? I mean, why aren't you doing that? Now, that's completely different than what African-Americans saw, because they saw a metaphor for that could be me. Not all African-Americans, obviously, but the left side of the spectrum saw that could be me, and wow. I mean, and so the protests, we were never, so I'm going back to the corporate thing. We were never so united as a country as we were on about Wednesday. before the riots, when it was just like, wow, that's wrong, and early protests started, who was not against it? Like the Klan meeting, like the people in the Clavern were not interested in it, maybe, or thinking, oh, well, you know, he got what he deserved, or whatever they were thinking. I don't know, because I'm not there. That's not my crowd. Okay? But we were never so united as a country as we were then. But then it went way beyond. It overshot into these riots, destroying stuff. It went into these demands of, disband the police. And now, okay, so you just lost all that unanimity. Go ahead.
I was going to say, you're exactly right. I mean, for that moment in time, America was paying attention that there needed to be some reforms. And look, and you know, to a lot of the listeners and the viewers, I don't want you guys to think that I don't believe that there are challenges. Yeah, I'm not blind. There are challenges, but it comes down to individuals make individual decisions. I don't think Chauvin is a reflection of police at large. He individually made a decision to take it that far, and his actions caused George Floyd to lose his life, and that's tragic. What I'm trying to say is that, you know, we need to take responsibility. We can't just automatically default to the racist argument. Yeah. Every time there's conflict in America, rather than talking out, we just divert to, well, it's just racism. Yeah. And, you know, and so going back to the overshooting, when I saw the looting and I saw the rioting, to me as a black man, it was heartbreaking, because I saw a lot of younger black men and women going into these stores, looting these stores, setting these, you know, buildings on fire. And I'm like, this is not how we need to be communicating to America, who's with us right now. Mm-hmm. That this, I feel like we're perpetuating the stereotype in the narrative that we're an unruly mob, that we were fitting. I mean, look at entertainment and television, you know. People want to know where these stereotypes come from. They're perpetuated in the media.
Yeah, they are. And that's fascinating. So we take cops off the air, which shows reality, but we're perpetuating these very stereotypes and all the if we actually wanted to make a statement, we would stop with almost every cop movie or every, you know what I'm saying, where these stereotypes are perpetuated, but those sell blockbusters. But we're going to take an aggressive stand. We're taking cops off the air. What? Cops have body cams. Live PD have body cams. So they're actually showing more reality than everything else in Hollywood. I said this yesterday with Megyn Kelly, to her credit. Megyn Kelly was on Fox. She went over to NBC or ABC. I don't remember, one of the major networks. But to her credit, she said, well, if we're going to do this with cops, why don't we do this with sexism and shut down all of the sexist things that are on TV? Well, we don't want to go there. That's different. Well, let's keep the conversation here on race.
right. Exactly right. It's a double standard. It's, that's why I can't take Black Lives Matter seriously, because if Black Lives Matter as a movement really wanted to focus in on the ails of the black community, we would be focusing on other things other than police brutality. Like you said, things we've covered today, we'd be talking about education, we'd be talking about poverty, the virtue signaling of Nancy Pelosi wearing the kente cloth, kneeling for 8 minutes. I mean, I get what they were trying to do, but to me, that was a slap in the face. If you really care about black Americans,
you process that differently than I do. So how do you process that? Because apparently my opinion doesn't matter as a white individual. So you are actually black. And how do you see making political gains out of that tragedy? Tell me about that.
Well, to me, it was an empty gesture. I mean, like I can, on the surface level, I get what you're trying to do. You're trying to say that you stand with the black community and you understand the oppression of the black community. But when you've been in office, Nancy Pelosi, for 40, 50 some years, and you try to virtue signal to me in 2020 that all of a sudden you're woke or you're hip, I don't buy it. With your chocolate ice cream that costs $6 in your freezer, I don't buy it. I mean, you're going to give me food stamps so I can buy that chocolate ice cream? Well, I don't need that. What I need is a job. What I need is to have school choice so I can send my kids that are the failing city schools, I can send my kids to a decent school.
Now that's really an interesting point, because that's one of the few places where I think, so earlier you were talking about it as we're trying to get these government solutions for things that aren't government solutions. You didn't say that exactly, but, and don't let me put words in your mouth, but I see a number of personal responsibility and cultural choices or cultural issues. So if, let's say I was a jerk and I looked at you and I thought, he's black, so I don't want to, whatever, right? And so let's say that was the case. It's not, but let's say it was. That's a cultural issue that if I have race, if I have hate in my heart, that's not government going to fix that. Okay. Now, government can keep me from discriminating. That's true. And absolutely should keep me from discriminating. But we're trying to fix a cultural issue with government solutions. The one of the about the only place where this really works is in education reform, because you can actually change some of the systems with education in order, because it's based on property taxes and where if you're in lower income neighborhoods. And I know what I'm talking about because my dad was a teacher in Newark, New Jersey. I understand this. Okay, so there is a legitimate place to make government, but it's very small. Remember that 3 feet as opposed to the 2 inches. Where is it? I don't know. 1 foot in between, 1.5, 5 inches. Mm-hmm. I don't know. But that's a place for government reform. The rest is either cultural, spiritual, or individual responsibility, or something along those lines. And I don't think we're serving ourselves by pointing the finger. So groupism,
right?
Racism is groupism. I don't care who. Now, racism 2.0 talks about power structures, and if you have the power, you're a racist. Okay, let's set that aside. But racism is groupism. So if I don't like you because of your color of your skin without knowing you, what am I? I mean, maybe I don't like you because you're a jerk. You're not. If I don't like you because you're a jerk, that's different. If I don't like you because of the color of your skin, then that is groupism. Aren't we doing groupism when we're calling for disbanding all police because of the actions of those that do those things? I mean, isn't that the same groupism as, tell me if I'm wrong. I mean, that's just my perspective, but I could be wrong. And I've been wrong before.
Yeah. I mean, I'm with you. I mean, I think we're going a little too far. We're talking about, you know, disbanding police and I think police proportionally help the inner cities, help the black neighborhoods and really save a lot of black lives. I don't know why all of a sudden we're targeting the police. I just feel like there's a lot of misdirection, maybe because we're in election season and America has a short attention span. So we have this little shiny object, you know, so now it's the police. But I would say Black Lives Matter. Hey, let's maybe like dial down taking apart the police department. Let's look at Planned Parenthood. Let's see how many black lives are aborted each year. Let's take a look at Planned Parenthood or something like that. If Black Lives Matter, let's look at some of these other areas where our community are affected in disproportionate ways, rather than just take the low-hanging fruit that CNN, Don Lemon, and Anderson Cooper want us to talk about.
Yeah. So now I can see more how why you're a minority and a minority, and they will hate you when you raise things like that. I mean, the idea that you would even invoke abortion is going to just set the left off. I mean, give them, how do you get this way? I mean, tell us your story. Like, how did you get to where you're thinking the way that you're thinking? Because you are not the stereotypical, just a weird even conversation to have here, a stereotypical African-American in the way that you think. But they're all, like I said, there's somewhere between 2 and 2.5 million of you out there. And to discount your narrative is just as wrong as discounting other African-Americans experience in the narrative. So tell me how you got to where you are.
Well, it was a long road. You know my story. I grew up in Maryland, you know, overwhelmingly working class Democrat family, you know, in Maryland, Democrats outnumber Republicans 2-1. So I grew up on the liberal spiel, you know, and then somehow I got to Liberty University, where I met this crazy wackadoo professor, Dr. Gerdes, that had him for a government and economics class, and gave me some food for thought. I started wrestling with some things. So on top of when I got to Liberty, I had just given my life to Christ. So I was a newborn Christian. And so I'm struggling with a lot of different things. And I found that as I grew in my faith and I understood my relationship with Christ and just how fallen as humans we are, I became a little bit more conservative in my political ideologies. You know, I started to really understand that, you know, there was one party that kind of advocated personal responsibility, personal choice, and there was one party or political thought that kind of likes to embrace victimhood and likes to keep people dependent on government solutions. And so I started really separating, and I ended up on one side of the spectrum.
That's really interesting. Now, I see a lot of that. I see that those that are sincerely, like, and I'm talking about evangelical Christian, not just Christian, like I go to church because that's what we have always done and it doesn't mean anything. And then on Monday through Saturday, I don't really do it. But those that have really gone all in on Christianity within the African-American community, I see a lot of a shift in their turning them to this more personal responsibility. In the same way that your sin is not corporate sin, your sin is your sin. And you have to confess it before God. And that's between you and God. And, you know, I'm going to heaven or hell based on whether I've turned my life over to Christ and asked him for forgiveness of my sin. Or it's not because the society that I live in has caused whatever. And when you put those, when you line those things up, it's almost like a compass, lining up points on a compass. I start to see a lot more very conservative Christian African-Americans. And that's not to say that others aren't Christian, but that's where I see the movement away from the left side of the spectrum and the society is to blame kind of crowd.
Right. And we spoke to this a little bit yesterday that, you know, traditionally, you know, African-Americans are conservative, you know, because traditionally, you know, there are a lot of strong conservative Christian values are in the African American community. And I think that's why you're seeing a little bit of have you seen the hashtag on Twitter, Blexit, Black People Leaving the Democratic
Party? That's who I was thinking of. That's exactly who I was thinking of when I was watching an interview with him. I'm trying to remember his name.
I know one guy, well, I know the gentleman named Paris. I don't know if he's part of that movement.
Remember, he was on the Rubin Report on YouTube, and if you look up Blexit and Rubin Report, you'll find him. But he's talking about his story, and it mirrored what you just said. He said, "Look, I mean, I was just partying. I came to I came to Christ, and then as I came to Christ, I started to really, I got into the Bible. I started to think through this, and it really changed my perspective about how society worked, how I functioned, and I think that's a big part of it. So that's why I even asked you this question just now. So." I think you're onto something. I think that's a key to the differences. Go ahead. I didn't mean to interrupt you. I just got.
Well, no, I just think that's why you're seeing. I mean, because the radicalization of the left. I mean, they just. I think their whole worldview is anti-American, anti-prosperity,
anti-capitalism.
And yeah, I mean, I just it's extreme, and I think it's getting extreme for some. I think a lot more. Black people are coming to the realization that the Democratic Party may not be the party for them. Whether they stay independent or they flock to the Republican Party, I don't know. That remains to be seen. But I think, you know, Trump's message of jobs and the economy, I think, resonates with a lot of Black people.
Yeah. So you were just saying something that I wanted to address, and we're going to wind up here pretty shortly. But so I was reading a book entitled So You Want to Talk. So in the last few days, I've read more about this in the last couple of weeks. I'm sincerely trying to understand the other side that I don't naturally see, right? And so I've asked liberal friends, hey, can you feed me stuff? So I was reading a book called So You Want to Understand Race by Ijeoma Oluo. I don't know that I'm pronouncing that right. I also mispronounce Polish names with equal, so don't hold me to that. But so we get to the last chapter and she's speaking just to white people. And she says this, "Who are you? You are at times kind and mean, generous and selfish, witty and dull. Sometimes you are all of these things at once. If you are white in a white supremacist society, you are racist." Okay, so let me stop there and say this. The way that she defines a white supremacist society is just that there's a white majority.
Just being white.
Yeah, that's the rub here, because we're using the same words and we're meaning different things. Me, if I were to find a white supremacist society, I'd say, well, South Africa pre-Mandela, I would say South, or even before the Civil War, maybe, right? That's a white supremacist society. That's different. The way that we use the words, the way that we define the words is half the battle here. But follow her thoughts. She says this, "If you are white in a white supremacist society, you are racist. If you are male in a patriarchy, you are sexist." And I would take issue with what is patriarchy exactly. Let's talk about that. But nonetheless, if you're male in a patriarchy, you are sexist. If you are able-bodied, you are ableist. Okay. If you are anything above poverty in a capitalist society, you are classist. You can sometimes be all of these things at once. Now, I read that and I thought, wow, that is how this whole segment of society thinks. And that's like the critical social justice kind of thinking. That's exactly what that is. So we've been contaminating an entire generation with critical social justice theory. And this is groupism. Mm-hmm. You know, like I just said about the police department or whatever, racism is I'm better than you-ism. I am better than your group, right? That's groupism. Yeah. That's racism this way. It's like, you know, go ahead. I'll let you speak for a second. Tell me what you
think. Well, I was just thinking back. Like I remember growing up like in the 90s where it was like, don't put a label on me. Don't put me in a box. I mean, what happened to that? Like now all of a sudden you have to be put in a box. You have to be put in a category.
Yep.
I don't know. I just can't connect with these people,
Dr. Gerdes. This is where the rub is. This is where the rub is, because I think it's where you have this different perspective that if you are this category, you are this thing. And, I've been wrestling with this for the last 3 weeks. And this isn't out of the fully cooked, so it shouldn't come out of the oven yet. But my understanding of the progressive side of the spectrum here, the social justice side of it is it's some weird amalgam between Marxism and postmodernism, because it's all about power plays in the narratives, and it's all wrapped up in a racial box. It doesn't matter if it's the racial box or if it's the feminist box or if it's the transgender box or whatever. That's what it is. If you're in the majority, you have the dominant voice. And because it's dominant, it's not true. So you have to bend to the minority. Now, I would say it a little bit differently. Yes, there is a majority voice, but that doesn't mean that it's not true. That doesn't mean that it's false. That doesn't mean that it's right. Right? There is a minority voice. There are minority voices like yours. Right. Okay. So there are all different voices, but truth is truth. Like if I say that wall back there isn't there, I will bump into it, because truth
right.
is truth. It doesn't matter if my perspective is that I don't believe that wall's there, or I don't call it a wall. That's irrelevant. That's completely irrelevant. Truth is truth, and we have to align to it. And just because you're the dominant doesn't mean that's wrong. And just because you're the minority doesn't mean that it's right, and vice versa. So we have to align ourselves to that which is, not think in terms of, well, we just got to pull down the power structures of the people that are. No, that's going to get us nowhere. That's going to lock us into more fighting, not less. What do you think?
Well, I think a lot of it, I mean, to me, I think the advent of social media has created this. I think a lot of people live in social media and don't live in reality.
Yeah.
I can identify all day long with being a couch, but I'm a human being. I mean, that's the truth, right? Maybe that was real harsh, yeah.
That's a funny thing too, because I could say, no, I'm a woman.
Yeah,
like they will go this far. They will, say, yes, you can be a woman if you want to feel like you can be a woman. That didn't change my chromosomal structure.
Exactly
the same, but I am necessarily a racist because I am part of the white category, the group. Remember, because you're this group, you're bad. That's called racism. I mean, I don't know any other way to understand that other than this. And I'm sincerely trying. I'm listening. I'm reading a lot. Okay. Like this is consuming my summer. I'm almost bitter about that. But
isn't it, this is what gets me the double standard. Okay. So you look at me and say, oh, he's black. Okay. Well, a lot of people struggle with that. They look at me and say he's Hispanic or he's this or he's that. Okay. That's racism, right? That's racist. If I look at you and say, oh, that's just a white person, that's racist. Yep. But you could be German, you could be Irish. I mean,
I'm both.
There's so much. Yeah, there's so much more to the story. Why are we just like, based on what I can see from my eyes, that's what you are.
Yeah.
And, you know, I got to put you somehow, and maybe that's a human thing. I have to put you in some kind of category, or I have to identify you in some sort of way. But it's just really getting out of hand. And, you know, the browbeating, and you have to conform, the cancel culture, everything we've been discussing, it's getting to a point where it's just too much to handle.
Yeah.
Like, what's the end game here? Where are we trying to go?
So let me ask you that. What is the end game? What would you like to see?
I would like to see our leaders stop playing the race game for political gain. I'd like to have people have an open and honest dialogue about, there are some racial wounds in this country. Don't get me wrong.
There are legitimate.
Every time we get to a point where they're scabbing up and we're healing up, somebody wants to come along and rip the scab off for political gain. And it just so happens every 4 years, because every 4 years we have a conversation about which nominee is racist.
Yeah.
Anyway, but I'd like to see the black vote stop being taken for granted and have some real open, honest dialogue about how, as a community, we can have access to some of the gains that our, you know, counterparts have. Like we talked about, economic, education. I think some of those things can be policy driven, and mm-hmm. some of those things don't necessarily have to be culture driven.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know. I agree. There is a place for that. Okay. So I always end each of these episodes with a quote for contemplation. And I was trying to decide between two. Both were from Thomas Sowell, another unicorn who has written prolifically about, he's an economist, and he's written prolifically about race, not just in the United States, but even all around the world. And when you start to expand your understanding about how racism functions in other places, it's really eye-opening. Okay, so here he says this. I'm going to give you two quotes this time. Racism does not have a good track record. It's been tried out for a long time, and you'd think by now we'd want to put an end to it instead of putting it under new management, which is kind of what we're doing right now. The second quote, so here's the other quote for contemplation. If you have always believed that everyone should play by the same rules and be judged by the same standards, that would have gotten you labeled as a radical 60 years ago, a liberal 30 years ago, and a racist today.
Yep.
That sounds about right.
That sounds about right.
All right. Well, Morris, thank you for coming on the show. We really appreciate it. And I hope our audience has been enlightened by your perspective.
Well, thanks, Dr. Gerst, again for having me. I love the conversation, and I just pray for the healing of our nation.
Absolutely.
The division, I just pray for healing.
And I'll just flip and move things around as necessary.
Okay, cool.
So, all right. Well, hey, man, it was kind of good to get to. I'm kind of glad that it didn't record so that we could have a second conversation, because it's good to catch up again.
Yeah, man, it's pretty awesome. Thanks for having me on your show. And who knows, maybe this will blow up and we'll be on Fox or CNN or something. Who knows? You know.
Yeah, I'm not counting on that. So everything I'm trying to talk about is about leadership, but you can't not talk about this now, because it just. Right. It would almost be just dropping the ball if you're not trying to unpack this and discuss this. And you're probably right about flavor and about it'll be a political movement that'll move on. I would be very surprised, as a prediction, if we're still talking about this past November. I'd be surprised if in a couple months it hasn't died down in its, you know, potency. But that underlying political stuff of the critical social media theorists there's something toxic about that. I don't know how to describe it better. The more I look at it, the more I think this is exactly the right. Did you listen to yesterday?
Oh yeah, your podcast.
Yeah, I mean, the more I listen to these guys, I'm thinking, like, we just can't have a conversation if you're just going to say, well, you embrace everything I say or you're wrong.
Yeah,
how do you have a conversation?
I mean, isn't this kind of like what was how Nazi Germany and Stalin's Russia, the Soviet Union, this is how they kind of started out?
You just can't, you have to have more dialogue, not less, if you're going to be able to come to some kind of conclusions. But they don't want to come to, so think Obamacare, right? There was no single Republican signed on to Obamacare. There's a reason why it was stripped away. I think this is important too. So there was not a single Republican that signed on to Obamacare. And so this was just pushed on them, right? I think there's an analog here with what's going on with the social justice movement, because they're just pushing it. If you don't believe this, then you are the problem. You are wrong. And you have to come on board, or you're a racist. So there are going to be a lot of people, and the Trump election too. They were surprised when Trump, because it was politically incorrect to say, I'm voting for Trump. You can't say that. Other people would be hating on you. So there's going to be a silent majority that's going to sit back and say, okay, fine. If you won't let me speak, I'm not going to speak, but So a man convinced against his will is of the same opinion still, right?
Well, how many people will pay lip service to Black Lives, or how many people will pay lip service, but when they go in that voting booth, it's just them, and they'll vote the other way? I think obviously.
What I'm saying is we're not actually convincing by strong arming. So we need to get away from strong arming and get into actually having that conversation. And that was what I was trying to talk about the other day.
Well, I want to know, is this election, I guess, I didn't realize it, but Trump's going to get, if he gets reelected, he'll get two more Supreme Court picks.
Probably. That's correct.
So that'll this be is a big battle for the soul of America.
That'll be big because Roberts has been disappointing.
Yeah, Roberts basically is the wolf in sheep's clothing, yeah, right?
He's swing voters. And it seems like only conservatives appoint swing votes. You never see somebody get appointed on the left and then swing right.
That's true. I don't know what it is about George W. Bush. I guess Reagan put some swingers on there too. I guess,
not but, realizing it. I mean, they look solid at the time, but good grief. Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah. Okay. But yeah, we could go on about the Supreme Court, couldn't we?
Yeah.
What they did to
Kavanaugh.
We're not going to
solve that. But what you said could actually have an effect. I mean, in the same way that I had a guy on the show that he was a high school friend of mine who had coronavirus. Now, that was listened to his show. But, you know, when you're thinking, well, he was 46, what? Mm-hmm. Yeah, he was 46 and he had coronavirus. Be careful with that. Take this seriously. So. Right. I think that you'll have a impact on people because of where you sit, dictates where you stand. And I think your perspective will hopefully be helpful in this process. So, all right.
Well, thanks,
anyway,
Doctor.
Hey, good talking to you as always. Let me know if I can help you with anything.
All right, boss man. Well, I will stay in touch. Keep doing what you're doing.
Yeah, man.
All right. So take care.
All right. Have a good one.